Well, I think like a lot of people, I was just shocked by the devastation. It's one thing to see it on television, but it's another just to drive through just so much devastation. It really reminds me of being up in Indonesia after the tsunami. You know, you will have heard probably comparisons before to the tsunami, but I think in this instance, they're not overdone. It's a very similar effect, and there is devastation. You know, you drive, it's like you drive 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You're seeing nothing but flattened houses, uprooted communities, and you just think, well, it just goes on and on. And I think that was a shocking thing. But on the inspiring thing, we saw a lot of hope today. We saw reconstruction starting. We saw a lot of debris being cleared. And we also saw some wonderful people who were determined to be optimistic and look forwards and not backwards. And really a great privilege to see how resilient and full of hope the people of the Philippines are.
We speak at least, 2 weeks after the typhoon actually struck. Nobody's talking about it in the media anymore, but you speak of a scenario which is still a great emergency.
Well, I think, you know, the publics and governments around the world have been exceptionally generous. And, you know, while there is always need for more funds, I think most of the established professional aid agencies now have the funds they need to set up large operations. And let's not forget the Philippines government has, you know, got tremendous capacity and commitment in this situation. But, again, driving through it, you just think the cost of rebuilding. I mean, even though large sums have been raised and pledged, I mean, the cost of rebuilding is so much damage, just running into billions and billions and billions of dollars. But I think that even though the media have moved on, I mean, the media have done the Philippines people a tremendous service in a sense because of the coverage that they did give to the disaster. That it created, as you know, a tremendous and very heartfelt outpouring of compassion and generosity across the world, which has led to aid agencies and the government of the Philippines having so many resources to now spend properly on helping people here. So I think the media have done, you know, have made a significant positive contribution in this crisis.
HelpAge is denouncing the fact that older people have been disproportionately affected by the typhoon. Yeah. Can you give us some idea of the numbers there?
Of the deaths, so there's about 7,000 deaths, and not all of them have been sort of officially reported with ages and death certificates, etc. And we think the reason for that is probably because in many cases families all died together, if you like. But in areas where ages have been reported on the death certificate, what the statistics are showing is that 38% of the dead were over 60. So it's a very high number. And we spoke to some older people, you know, in several locations today, who were in an extremely precarious and vulnerable situation. Some with, you know, specific health needs, others with disability, age-related disability, and obviously many people just sort of terribly sad and anxious about how they were going to rebuild their lives at this point, you know, already being older people.
Why were so many elder people killed, actually found dead after this disaster?
Well, we found something similar after the Japanese tsunami in 2011, where again, sort of disproportionately high number of people killed were older, and I guess it must be just, I mean, partly related to speed of reaction to the nature of the crisis, very unexpected event, and I think it's something we need to understand better because obviously it's completely unacceptable to have older people sort of disproportionately at risk of dying in events like this. So it's something that we're helpers are trying to understand. We've already done a study in Japan trying to understand the phenomenon better, and we'll certainly be planning to do something similar here and try and understand the reasons for this so that they can perhaps be prevented in disaster risk reduction programs in the future.
Now, as you were saying, elder people have particular vulnerabilities. Are they being catered for in the aftermath?
Well, obviously, it's something that HealthEd International is very committed to do, and we've raised a good sum of money from supporters of HealthEd affiliates across the world. And we certainly plan to be catering to those needs, to those specific requirements. But what we're also trying to do is to make sure that mainstream aid agencies and UN agencies and the government of the Philippines, that they're also aware of how you can make programs aid-sensitive. And I'll give you an example. I mean, at the moment, wherever you drive through Tacloban, you're seeing clear-up crews. We saw several ourselves this morning. And, you know, obviously this is incredibly important because it helps to start to clear the phenomenal quantity of debris. But it also generates cash, these income-earning opportunities for, you know, tens of thousands of people working across the town. But this is very physically demanding work, and it's not work where older people are going to be natural candidates to do. In fact, I don't think we saw any older people at all in any of the cash for work activities that we saw all morning. So what we try and do is to just do an unconditional cash transfer, or to pay older people, for example, for looking after the younger children in the community, which many of them are doing, so that their adult children can go and do some of this paid, hard manual work. So what we do as HealthEd, we just try and remunerate that work and make sure that older people also have access to the cash that everybody needs to start rebuilding and to purchasing the essentials, because the markets are starting to reestablish themselves quite quickly. This is, of course, is a wonderful thing. It's a very entrepreneurial country. There's a lot of activity going on, and it's just a question of people having access to cash to start to access those goods that are reappearing.
I have a Filipino lady who helps me at home, and she is abroad whilst her young children are being looked after by her elderly parents in the Philippines. I think this is quite a common situation, meaning that there are a lot of elderly people who are taking care of families. Have you had that experience?
We have. An exact example for today, actually, that we went to a very remote village on a hill side that was off the main road. And, you know, we're very committed to try and get aid to where it's not reached to date. So we've been looking to target communities that are away from the main road and that haven't necessarily been reached by aid so far. We found three generations of women together. So there was a sort of 22-year-old, I think her mum was about 40, and the grandmum was about 70, as far as I could tell. And the youngest woman, the woman who was in her early 20s, she had a five-year-old son who was in the village, and she's a single mum. But she was telling us that her job is in Dubai. She was very sad because she'd been working in the Gulf for 4 years. Imagine the sacrifice living away from her child. That she'd been working as a domestic worker in the Gulf, and she'd been sending money back to build a house, and the house had just blown down during the typhoon. So she was very sad. She was obviously relieved her family were unharmed, but she was very sad about her loss and saying that, you know, she'd wanted to come back and live in the Philippines more permanently, but now she was going to have to go back and work for a few more years in the Gulf. So I think that this is a very common situation, that you have grandparents caring for children. And that's, again, one of the reasons why we're always trying to make sure that mainstream aid agencies are sensitive to the physical needs, health needs, emotional needs of older people at times of crisis.